The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are wrestling with, well, a really big question. Are these huge tech platforms we use every day, you know, Google, Amazon, Facebook, are they just too big? And maybe more importantly, does our old antitrust law even know what to do with them?
It's a massive debate, right? It's happening in Washington globally. Everyone sort of feels like something's off. But the legal fight over, say, breaking a big tech is, it's complicated.
Yeah. So to really get a handle on the legality and the economics, you need solid guidance. Today, we're digging into the thinking of Herbert Hovenkamp, mostly looking at his book, The Antitrust Paradigm, Restoring a Competitive Economy.
And our goal here for you listening isn't just to list arguments. It's more like a shortcut to understanding Hovenkamp's view. It's kind of a middle ground approach, but a really rigorous one.
Mm-hmm. It helps you see exactly how current U.S. competition law is supposed to work for these digital giants, assuming it's applied properly.
Exactly. And what you'll get is a quicker grasp of this big conceptual battle. So on one side, you have the approach that's dominated for decades, the Consumer Welfare Standard, or CWS.
Right.
And on the other, you've got these more radical critics, sometimes called new Brandeisians, think Lena Khan, who argue this CWS is just fundamentally broken, needs replacing. Hovenkamp, he steps right into that fight.
And Herbert Hovenkamp isn't just some academic commentator. We're talking about someone whose work genuinely shapes the law.
Oh, absolutely. He's widely seen as the dean of American antitrust law. He's a university professor at Penn Law and Wharton. Mm. His whole career has been about linking law and economics in this area.
And his influence is, well, it's huge. He co-authors the major treatise, Antitrust Law. It's this enormous multi-volume work.
The one the Supreme Court cites.
Exactly. When the Supreme Court tackles a competition case, they often reference Hovenkamp. So, yeah, when he talks, the legal world tends to pay attention.
And what makes him so relevant now is his position. He's not trying to tear everything down. He's more of a pragmatic reformer. He actually defends the modern CWS, the economics-based approach.
Mm-hmm.
But he argues really forcefully that it hasn't been used correctly. He thinks we need much tougher, smarter enforcement. So he's kind of the intellectual counter-argument to those wanting a total overhaul. He's saying the tools are fine, we just need to use them properly.
Okay, so let's unpack his main argument in the antitrust paradigm. The core idea is basically defending the CWS, but also updating it for today.
Right.
Hovenkamp believes the standard itself is strong and flexible enough. The problem isn't the rule book, he says. It's that enforcement has been too weak for decades, and regulators haven't really adapted their analysis to how digital markets actually harm consumers.
He's essentially saying, stop blaming the framework. The real goal of antitrust isn't just about company size. It's about protecting the process of competition itself. And when that process works, the outcome is what economists call maximized consumer surplus, which means, yes, lower prices, but also better quality, more innovation, more choices for us.
Then he pushes back hard against using antitrust for other things, right? Like fixing income inequality or protecting small businesses just because they're small.
Precisely. He argues those are important goals, definitely. But antitrust law is like a specialized tool designed for economic analysis.
Yeah.
Trying to use it for broad social engineering. He has this great analogy.
The scalpel one.
Yeah, it's like trying to chop down a tree with a surgeon's scalpel. It makes the law confusing, unpredictable, and ultimately, it can't do its main job properly, which is stopping real anti-competitive behavior.
Okay, let's dig into how he defends the CWS analytically. This part actually surprised me quite a bit. He goes way back to the Sherman Act of 1890. The foundation.
Yeah, he does. And he challenges this sort of romanticized idea that the main goal back then was just breaking up big companies to decentralize power.
That's what you often hear, though.
It is. But Hovenkamp looks at the legislative history and argues the lawmakers were actually overwhelmingly focused on stopping cartels and trusts that were, you know, fixing prices, raising prices, cutting back production, the very things the CWS targets today.
Wait, so you're saying his argument is that the people who claim CWS is just like a Reagan-era conservative invention are historically off base, that focusing on economic harm to consumers was part of the original idea.
That's his reading of the history, yeah.
Yeah.
It gives the CWS much deeper roots in American law than his critics often suggest,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, really changes the context of today's political arguments.
Hmm, okay.
So fast forward to today's digital world. Hovenkamp highlights this key tension regulators face balancing what he calls static efficiency versus dynamic efficiency.
Okay, those sound academic. Break that down. Static versus dynamic.
Right. So static efficiency is basically about the here and now, getting the lowest price, the best product quality today.
Like the cheapest taxi fare right now.
Exactly. Dynamic efficiency is about the future. The incentives for companies to innovate, to create the next big thing. Think about the invention of Uber, or maybe self-driving cars. That's dynamic efficiency disrupting the old market. Good antitrust policy has to protect both. You don't want to kill future innovation just to get slightly lower prices today.
Right. Which brings us to this error cost framework. That seems vital for deciding when regulators should step in.
It is. Because regulators can make two kinds of mistakes, and both are costly.
Okay.
First is a false positive. That's when regulators intervene and block something like a merger that actually would have been good for consumers or innovation. That chills progress.
And the second?
A false negative. That's when they fail to act, and they let a monopoly get stronger or engage in harmful behavior. Hovenkamp argues that for decades, we've become way too scared of false positives.
Meaning we've let too many false negatives slide.
That's his point. Because of weak enforcement, the risk of really damaging false negatives, letting monopolies become entrenched, is now dangerously high. He thinks we need more, well, nerve, more courage from enforcers.
And that failure to act, that false negative, it's like ignoring a serious illness early on. The long-term damage from a dominant monopoly can be huge.
Exactly. We need more courage. And that courage is especially needed when you face the zero price challenge. This is a big one for digital. How do you prove consumers are harmed when Google search or Facebook seem free? Traditional CWS often focused heavily on price increases.
Right. If there's no price, where's the harm? But Hovenkamp says the harm is definitely there, just different.
Absolutely. It's real. It's measurable. Just not always in dollars. You pay with your data, your privacy, or you pay with lower quality.
Like how?
Well, think about Google maybe tweaking its search results to favor its own shopping service, even if another site has a better deal. That's a harm to quality. Or Facebook's algorithms pushing, say, inflammatory content because it boosts engagement, even if it harms the quality of public discourse. Hovenkamp argues that's a measurable degradation of service quality.
Okay, that makes sense. It's a broader view of consumer welfare.
It has to be for digital markets. Now, Hovenkamp isn't saying being big is illegal. He acknowledges network effects often lead to winner-take-all outcomes. Big platforms can be natural.
Right.
But it's the conduct used to get or keep that dominant position that matters for antitrust. Size itself isn't the problem. Abusing that size is.
Which brings us to things like mergers, right? Mm-hmm. Especially these so-called killer acquisitions.
Yes. Think about the controversy around Facebook buying Instagram or WhatsApp when they were still relatively small.
So the idea is they weren't buying them just to integrate the tech.
Exactly. Hovenkamp argues the goal often seems to be eliminating a potential future competitor, killing them off early. He says that directly harms consumers by destroying future innovation and choice, and that should be an antitrust violation under a properly used CWS.
Okay, and what about vertical integration, like Amazon running the marketplace and selling its own products on it?
That's another key area. The risk Hovenkamp points out is that a platform like Amazon can use all the data it gets from third-party sellers on its site.
Data those sellers have to give Amazon to participate.
Right. And use that data to unfairly boost its own competing private label products. That's using market power in one area, the platform, to disadvantage rivals in another, the product market. That's foreclosure.
That's a really clear application of the CWS to these complex platform dynamics. But he also takes it somewhere else entirely, doesn't he? The labor market.
He does. And this is a really interesting part of his argument about the CWS's flexibility. He says antitrust absolutely has a role to play in policing labor markets, too.
Okay, labor. That might surprise some people. How does antitrust law connect to jobs and wages?
Through the concept of monopsony. It's like the flip side of monopoly.
Yeah.
Monopoly is one seller. Monopsony is one dominant buyer.
So in the labor market, that means one dominant employer, or maybe a few big employers acting together.
Exactly. If companies in an area or industry collude to keep wages down, that's wage fixing. Hovenkamp says that's a straightforward antitrust violation.
Like price fixing, but for wages.
Precisely. Mm. And similarly, if companies use overly aggressive non-compete agreements to stop workers from moving to competitors, that can also be an exercise of monopsony power. It harms workers, the suppliers of labor, by limiting their options and bargaining power. He argues protecting workers from this kind of collusion fits perfectly within the CWS framework of protecting the competitive process.
Okay, so if we try to boil down his core messages, theme one feels like the flexibility of the CWS. He's saying the standard isn't stuck in the past. It can analyze everything from steel prices to search algorithms to, well, non-compete clauses.
Yeah, that adaptability is key to his defense. It provides the sophisticated tools needed, he argues.
Right, which gives us the clarity needed for these really complex digital markets.
Then theme two, which is critical for tech, data as a unique competitive asset. This is huge. More data helps companies like Google improve their services, which attracts more users, which generates even more data. It's a self-feeding loop.
A data moat.
Exactly. And because data is non-rivalrous in some ways, one company using data doesn't stop another from using similar data, but gathering that much data is hard for rivals. It makes traditional antitrust remedies, like just breaking up a company, really complicated.
Yeah, because even if you split the company, does the data advantage just stick with one part? How do you solve the core data dominance problem?
It's a massive challenge.
Yeah.
Which leads straight into theme three, failure of enforcement, not doctrine. Hovenkamp is really clear on this.
Yeah.
He thinks the existing legal tools, like the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act, are mostly sufficient.
So the problem isn't the law itself?
Not primarily, in his view. The problem is decades of timid prosecutors, agencies that don't have enough resources, and courts that have become overly skeptical of antitrust claims.
So the solution he points to is basically institutional courage. More funding for agencies, prosecutors willing to bring tough cases, and courts willing to hear them based on sound economics, not necessarily brand new laws.
That's the gist of it. He believes the current law has teeth. It just needs to be used more aggressively and intelligently.
You know, the book has some really memorable lines that capture these ideas.
It really does. He has a knack for summarizing complex points powerfully.
Like this one challenging the regulators directly. The greatest failure of modern antitrust has not been its guiding principle, but rather our collective loss of nerve. I mean, that's a pretty direct shot.
It is. A call for more vigorous enforcement. And then for the zero price problem, this line really clarifies his approach. In zero price digital markets, consumer harm is not invisible. We just have to know where to look. Consumers pay with their data, their attention, and with a subtle degradation in the quality of the service they receive.
That gives regulators a language, doesn't it? A way to articulate harm beyond just price effects when they go to court.
Exactly. And finally, that sharp rejection of using antitrust for everything. Using antitrust law to pursue broad social goals is like using a delicate surgeon's scalpel to chop down a tree. It really highlights his view on keeping antitrust focused on competition.
So for someone just trying to make sense of the news about big tech cases, how can they use Hovenkamp's framework?
Well, he gives us a really useful question to ask.
Yeah.
When you see a big tech company making a move, don't just react to its size or success. Ask, is this the result of superior innovation? Did they just build a better mousetrap which benefits consumers? Or is it anti-competitive exclusion? Are they using their power mainly to block rivals and protect their dominance, even if it means less choice or innovation for us? Applying the CWS correctly means figuring out which is which.
That's a great filter for news headlines. And what about for people actually in policy or running businesses?
For business leaders, especially big firms, the advice would be carefully document the pro-competitive reasons for your strategies. If you're doing vertical integration, show how it improves efficiency or benefits consumers. Don't just assume it's fine. That helps mitigate risk.
Makes sense.
And for regulators, Hovenkamp's work offers a kind of roadmap. It shows how to legally challenge things like killer acquisitions based on the harm to future innovation, even though proving future harm is admittedly tough in court.
All right, final thoughts. For me, the most surprising thing was that historical argument. The idea that the CWS isn't just some 80s invention, but actually connects back to the original Sherman Act's focus on harm from cartels. That really reframes the CWS's legitimacy today.
Yeah, that historical grounding is powerful. For me, the biggest takeaway is just the need for nuance. You know, effective policy here isn't simple. It's this constant balancing act. You want to encourage innovation, let companies reap rewards for genuine breakthroughs.
But you also have to step in hard when they cross the line into abusing market power.
Exactly. And Hovenkamp argues it requires sophisticated economic analysis based on evidence, not just broad assumptions or political slogans.
Yeah.
It demands careful thought.
A challenging but necessary approach for a complex digital age.
Indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.